Hey, great podcast today. We give you all the latest on what's happening in the House and Israel. You don't want to miss it. Brought to you by Home Title Lock. Most people have no idea that there's an invisible gap in their home's protection. Your home, your equity, is at risk. This invisible threat is house stealing. According to the FBI, and I quote, con artists pick a house. It can be a vacation home, rental property, or the home someone is living in. They transfer the deed of the house into their name by obtaining the forms, using fake IDs, and then filling out the paperwork with the proper authorities. Now they own the home. Once this step is complete, they take out loans using your home as collateral. They can sell your home from right out from underneath you. This is not something that can happen. This is something that does happen. Home Title Lock can make all the difference. Protect your home from this invisible gap. Check your home's title right now at HomeTitleLock.com. HomeTitleLock.com. Use the promo code BECK. They'll send you a complete scan of your home's title. Your first 30 days, triple lock title protection is free. HomeTitleLock.com, promo code BECK. HomeTitleLock.com.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
I want to talk to you about the shoreline. I want to talk to you. We right now are adrift in a sea of lies and confusion and chaos. And when you find yourself in times of confusion, you have to ask yourself, is this what I want? Are we getting further away from sanity or closer to it? History shows civilizations do not thrive on whims, but we thrive on unwavering principles and truth. Years ago, I said, if you don't stand for something, you will fall for anything. In the grand tapestry of our nation, disagreements are the threads that we weave together. Tax rates, parties, policy debates. We can navigate these. But when we start dismantling the bedrock on which our nation was built, when we start tampering with the eternal truths, we risk the entire structure collapsing. And make no mistake, this is not about Hamas. This is not about Israel. This is not about tax policies. It's not about global warming. This is about the entire structure coming down by design. Consider this. No matter how grand or opulent or how great, how wonderful your house is, if it is not built on a strong foundation, it's not going to last. If that foundation is universal principles like the sanctity of life or the simple truths found in the guidelines like the Ten Commandments, then you have something solid to build on. If not, it's a house of cards and the next breeze will send it tumbling. Our bedrock, our house has been built on bedrock that was so strong, it has taken decades to get us into this weak position. And you know what? America may not survive, but those truths, those principles will. And maybe it's just going to be just a few of us living by those principles that refuse to give in. We are now lost in so many different things. The debates on the House Speaker, the hell is happening there? Do you realize Rome is burning? We're lost in the debates now on who's going to be the Speaker. And we're now arguing about which one of these two guys that would both be okay, which one is going to be our savior? None of them is going to be our savior. None of them. You know why? Because we, the people, are not serious about things. We're not serious about it. We have $33 trillion in debt. And if we were serious about it, then our elected officials would be more serious about it. But we just think we can have it all. We're drowning in this debt. And Republicans, Democrats, I mean, Democrats are actually lighting the fires. Republicans are just, you know, playing the fiddle while Rome burns. And what happens? As we waste this time, what happens? You're building the story that Republicans don't know how to rule. Republicans can't. Republicans can't take anything seriously. They'll never get anything done. Why will they say that? Because in a very few short weeks, we're going to come up with another budget impasse. And while we're fiddling around trying to figure out who's going to be the leader, what's happening? Nothing. So we'll have a new CR, a blank check to the big and deep state. Our country is drowning in debt. Our citizens are about to experience a greater depression, which most people don't know what it even means because it's never been explained to them. There are no budget cuts that can be considered. It's all just, we have to spend all of it. Instead of seeking the shore, we're told we can fund two wars. We can do that. That's what the Treasury Department said yesterday. Of course we can. Really? Meanwhile, there's no budget cuts because we got the two wars, but we also have to continue the study, and I'm not making this up, of the lesbian vagina in the Congo. Yeah, there's no budget cuts. Dwight D. Eisenhower told us about this. Now, he was a military man, And in his farewell address, everybody remembers him warning of the undue influence of the military-industrial complex. But that's not just what he said. He said the military, scientific, and educational-industrial complex. He cautioned us about the potential rise of a disastrous rise of misplaced power. That the military, the science, and the educational systems would all be gathered around money. And they would serve the master of money through the government. And we're seeing it. We're also seeing this ugly head rise up in what used to be called the free marketplace. I want you to listen to something, a show I did in 2011 while I was still at Fox. Listen to this.
There are three groups of people that want a new world order. One, this is your choice. One world government. This is open society. This is the United Nations, whatever you want to call it. One world government. They have lots of money, lots of power, and they have NGOs, non-governmental organizations. They're getting that one done. They're organized. This one, this is the caliphate if you're in Iran or Turkey. This one is the United Islamic Nations. This is the one the Muslim Brotherhood is going for now. But it all look like this. It's a new world order. You know, and they're organized too. They have the religion and the mosques and apparently help from Google as well, at least in Europe, in Egypt. And then you have this one, workers union, or they call it state capitalism. Really what it is just good old fashioned communism. They have the unions and community organizing, but they're organized. They're moving forward. As George Soros told me, there is already, the ship has sailed and it is moving on. Really, has it? Well, these three are sailing.
They are sailing. What I told you at the time is happening right now. You've got the Islamists. You have the communists and the socialists. And you have the One World Order people all coming together, working together. Did you see that in Los Angeles, the Palestinian signs were not just in support of Hamas, but also for DEI? What? How's that happening? They're all working together. Now, what is in our national interest, America? A war? No. A return to truth, and that doesn't cost a dime. It's a treacherous path when government forgets its proper role, and we allow the weeds of chaos to strangle the roots of our foundational principles. Water will wet, fire will burn. That is always true. These are unwavering, undeniable truths. And just like these truths, they are principles that the nation was built on. Being the United States, United States, is not just a title. It's a declaration. It's a promise. It's a commitment to come together despite our differences. But that is not possible if you don't have principles. If you don't have principles, what are you coming around? What is bringing you together? It's really not hard, but it requires you to sift through the noise, through the chaos. It demands that we reject the falsehoods, the deception, and the lies. To unite, we have to remember the things that our grandparents and our great-grandparents, all the way down to our pilgrims, held dear. Because they, if we want to be the beacon of hope, the symbol of freedom, hell, if we just want our children not to be slaves, then we have to anchor ourselves to universal principles. I'm sorry, I know it's very fashionable to say all kinds of lies today. I know it's very fashionable to be open-minded and say, well, I don't know, Hamas. What don't you know about Hamas? What don't you know about Hamas? And what don't you know about Israel? Israel is exactly like us. They're good sometimes, bad sometimes. Hamas, bad. Always. Always. They are a culture of death, and we have embraced a culture of death. We got to find our way back to the truth. We have to hold fast to the principles that have stood the test of time, our Declaration of Independence, our Constitution, and our Bill of Rights. If we don't, we are going to be swept up in the winds of change. As you look at the news today, remember, principles and truths are not just words. They are the bedrock of our civilization. And as we ponder our path forward, let's make sure we're looking past the fancy, old-timey, dusty words and look at those words and find the underlying, meaningful, and everlasting truths. That is what will make us united and unshakable. You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program. As we approach the renewing of the American Covenant, which was done by George Washington, our pilgrims, and Abraham Lincoln, that is happening on this program the week before Thanksgiving. I invite you to join. You can find out all the information at glennbeck.com. Just look for the 40 Days and Nights program right on the front page. Skip Moen is with us. He was on with us a couple of weeks ago. He was fascinating, talking about how the Beatitudes have been mistranslated, and it's so much more beautiful and deep the way he has explained it. But we wanted to get him on to talk a little bit about good and evil and what is the solution here. He's written a great article. You can find it at skipmoen.com about what the biblical solution is. But he says nobody's ever going to want to do it. But I don't know. I think we've tried everything else. Maybe we should go with God's plan. Skip, welcome.
Thank you, Glenn. And yeah, it's a good idea. Let's go with God's plan.
Yeah. So the solution to the inhumanity of humans, or Hamas in this case.
Yeah. You know, I'd like to make a little caveat first. I have never been to Gaza. I've been to Israel many times. I have friends who live there. I know a lot of rabbis there. I've been to the West Bank. And so my perspective will be, you know, on the side of Israel's struggle against this evil in order for them to have peace. I recognize that there are huge humanitarian issues, but I think that we have to back up a little bit and remember that this conflict really isn't a conflict about the issues of Gaza and its political and social environment. It's a conflict between those who wish to exterminate the Jew at any cost, the real enemy, the evil part of that, and the rest of the world. It's not just about Israel. It's about, do we allow humans who are absolutely intent on the obliteration of an entire ethnic group or a race or whatever it happens to be, do we allow them to continue, or do we stand up and do something about it?
Well, why is it that we always seem to get to this place and then we turn a blind eye? For instance, this is what happened in Germany. Hitler was very clear on what he was going to do, but then he hid it. These people aren't hiding it. It is in their mission statements, their charter. They say it all the time. People who are protesting for them on the streets all over the world are saying, you know, death to the Jews, death to Israel, gas the Jews. And yet we always seem to say, well, no, they don't really mean that.
I think that that is definitely part of the problem, but that comes about because I think in the modern Western world, we have succumbed to the Enlightenment delusion of the goodness of all men, and we have been lulled to sleep by a church that has preached God is love without talking about the other side of the coin. I mean, the biblical model is pretty clear. God is love, and he expects people to respond to that love with a kind of character and society that reflects his character in society. But the point is that there is another side of the coin, and the principal examples of that in the biblical world are the flood, Sodom and Gomorrah, what happens to Elimelech. There are plenty of examples of harsh judgment when it's determined that that the population is beyond redemptive qualities, that it no longer exhibits those kinds of behaviors that qualify them as part of human society. And I think when we see that happen, you know, we are clearly God takes care of some of that stuff in the Bible, and I think we men and women who want to reflect his character, we have to do the same. We have to remember that this isn't just, an issue over some humanitarian crisis. This is an issue about whether or not, you know, we have the fortitude to stand up for what's right.
Or if we even know what's right anymore. The judgment comes harsher on those who claim, I think, to be on the side of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob when they fail. Than it does even sometimes on the enemies. They seem to continue to go on, but the nations, and I'm speaking here of ours and Israel, the nations that make a covenant with God and claim to be on God's side, when they stop, they're allowed to feel the full repercussions of what they've sown.
Yeah, I think, again, it's a problem with our current theology that teaches us that God is love and he loves everyone and we should love everyone. And we've forgotten the element of wrath that comes along behind that says, you know, there is a responsibility toward peace and loving kindness toward others. And when you fail in that, there's a judgment that comes. It reminds me, Glenn, of the terrible decision that Truman had to make in dropping the atomic bomb on Japan. I mean, certainly there were humanitarian issues involved, but it was also in a split second, the end of the war. I mean, it just finished everything that needed to be stopped in order for the war to not continue on and on and on in a slow way. And I think that, you know, Israel faces the same thing. You cannot allow an organization, as you said, whose very constitution calls for the obliteration of every one of your citizens. That isn't society. That's a culture of death.
And that's also why the rest of the Arab world will not take them in. Because every time they come in, there's a civil war in their nation, it's a seed of chaos. So, what are you saying, that Israel just goes until there's nothing left?
I don't want people to be confused about the Palestinian people who are not subject or part of the Hamas movement, because certainly there are some. The problem is sorting it out. The problem is that Hamas controls that environment in such a way that they use those people to accomplish their own purposes as
correct.
Well. You can't, you know, it's not possible to eradicate Hamas without collateral damage. It just isn't possible because of the way that they operate, right? But the point is, you have to eradicate them. If you don't, you will. You remember when Joshua mistakenly makes a treaty with a group of people? God has said to him, "Listen, I want the land cleaned of all these people, so that when
even the animals
occupy it, there's no corruption." And he mistakenly makes a treaty with people who misrepresent who they are, and he makes a covenant with them, and then he keeps that promise. And, of course, what happens is, over the next generations, that mistake grows and fosters an entire resident population within the land that causes nothing but chaos and destruction from that point on. And I think that's what Israel faces here. They, if they don't exterminate this issue, it will continue. It will just spring up someplace else. And your point.
Okay, hang on just a second, because you use the word exterminate. I want to make sure.
Yeah.
Exterminate Hamas, not exterminate all Palestinians.
Yeah, that's right. You're after Hamas. This is an issue about evil. It's not an issue about people, right? It's an issue about how do you combat true evil in the world. And your point about the Arab nations not wanting them is a really clear indication that there's a real problem here.
Right.
Not just Israel's problem.
Is this any different than what we had in World War II? I mean, with the Nazis, we didn't want to kill all of the Germans, but we'll kill enough of the Germans until they start saying, no, we're not part of this. We want nothing to do with the Nazis.
Yeah, I think it's very similar, but there's one important exception, and that is that Germany, the war that Germany started, that Hitler started, was not based in a religious ideal, and Hamas is basically their thinking is basically a religious idea that allows no negotiation, no surrender, and no qualification at all. In other words, they will attempt to achieve their objective, no matter what the cost is to the people around them or to themselves, because in their mind, there's only one objective, and that's the extermination of all Jews, and it doesn't matter if it takes every single one of them to do it, which is why negotiating or trying to come up with a political solution is never going to work. It just won't happen.
Skip, as a Bible scholar, you must see, you know, Gog Magog, Russia, Iran, never been in an alliance before. They're in an alliance now. The words of those followers in Iran, all of the clerics are what are called 12ers. They believe in the 12th Imam, and I believe their good guy is our bad guy, and our good guy is their bad guy in their end times philosophies and stories. And they're talking about this is the war to bring in the promised one. This, they're talking about a war that is biblical in nature. How concerned are you of this getting into a global war and something that at least looks an awful lot like end times kind of predictions?
Yeah, certainly there's a concern because an ideological war doesn't function in the same way that any past war that we're aware of in modern history, right? Our wars were all based on basically gain and loss. So we went to war when we thought we could achieve a victory with the reasonable results and have some positive impact for ourselves. But an ideological war doesn't work that way. And as you pointed out, a religious war has a purpose. Its only purpose is to fulfill the mission that God gives you. And in this case, if God gives them the mission, that means that they will bring about the end of the world. Then, you know, their eschatological concern really motivates this fervor, this insane behavior, and justifies it all, because in the end you're cleaning the world for the coming of the, you know, of the 12th Imam or the Messiah, right?
Yeah, their Messiah, not ours. Skip, thank you so much. I appreciate it. If you want to read more from Skip, we'd love to have you on again. SkipMowen.com, SkipMowen.com. Best of everything to you. Stay safe.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Andrew Tobin is with us now. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Glenn.
It is nice to talk to you. First, let's get an update from what's happening there. I know the president just gave a speech to Israel and the world. What does that mean to people who are in Israel, and how is it going to be viewed in the Middle East?
Yes, thank you for having me. Yeah, President Biden just arrived, gave a speech, and he also backed the Israeli take on the blast at the Gaza hospital.
Right.
He noted that U.S. intelligence also confirmed, with Israeli intelligence has concluded that was an Islamic Jihad rocket and not an Israeli rocket, as so many in the international and U.S. media falsely reported. I think that people, we've been so far, I think Israelis are skeptical people, and I don't think anyone is expecting the Biden administration to necessarily save Israel. But I think we've so far been, people here have been pleasantly surprised by Biden's backing of Israel, at least rhetorically, given his record with Iran and some of the rhetoric by members of the Democratic Party in Washington, D.C.
Horrible. Horrible. I mean, Israel is the one ally that we have that, you know, while they are asking for aid, they're the one ally that is like, well, no. You're not going to fight our battles. We'll fight our battle. You just want some cover and somebody saying, no, Israel has a right to do that, which is odd. And the only ally that we have that is very capable of fighting their own battle. But this looks like it is going into a regional war quickly. Is that your take on the ground there?
That is the fear. Yeah. Things are heating up with Hezbollah in the north. With even in Syria, there's been some exchanges of fire. And of course, Israel is now preparing to, or seems to be preparing to launch a ground assault into the Gaza Strip, which is, you know, where the Hamas terrorists came from on October 7th. So yeah, we, and actually in following the false reporting and the false claims from the Palestinians about the hospital bombing, things have, as you mentioned, things have become much more inflamed as far as protests in the West Bank, mobs surrounding U.S. embassies, including in Lebanon and Beirut. So, yeah, things appear to be escalating. I don't know. I don't think anyone knows for sure where it's going. And maybe I think most Israelis hope that it does not. That the war is contained to the Gaza Strip, and that we can deal with the terrorists who came and slaughtered our civilians and took a couple hundred of them hostage without having to fight a regional war. But it's definitely a very real possibility that things could escalate.
Yeah, and that's not going to stay a regional war. That'll go global, unfortunately, I fear. There's an opinion poll that I read in your article. 4 in 5 Jewish Israelis blame the government for the rampage. What does that mean exactly?
Yeah, there was actually another poll that came out either yesterday or today in a Israeli newspaper that showed an even higher number. I think it was 94% of Israelis think the government is to blame for this. It was a massive intelligence and military failure, or at least that's what it appears to. Or I think we can just say that definitively. It was a massive intelligence and military failure that we're kind of seen as barbarian terrorists, not a particularly sophisticated group, were able to burst across the high-tech Israeli border. And do so much damage, and the border remained unsecured for many hours, I believe days. There were regular Palestinian citizens from Gaza, not affiliated with Hamas, streaming into the country, participating in the atrocities, holding people hostage, robbing them. There's reports that they were involved in rapes and assaults and kidnappings. So it was a massive failure to predict that. Apparently there were indications, and it should have been detected, and to prevent it, and to deal with, you know, it took there's heroic stories of Israeli soldiers. I was seeing on Israeli TV last night. There was one young man who killed dozens and dozens of terrorists in a small Israeli village near the border. But he was just on his own with a couple of his friends. Fighting Hamas terrorists as they continue to flood in, and no one came to the rescue. So people are very Israel is a diverse country. People don't always know that. The country is Jews from the Middle East who were actually expelled by the Arab countries and forced to take shelter or to move to Israel. And there's lots of different types of, there are Christians, and there's different types of Jews, and there's even quite a few Jews from Russia and Africa.
No, I mean, honestly, if you've ever been to Israel or just around Jewish people, that I'm telling you, you have two rabbis, you have five opinions. I mean, it's like, it's
right.
Crazy.
And then we have the Arabs and
right.
Complicated. So we are a very divided country, and we've had our fair share of beefs and quarrels lately. But, this event, as you might expect, kind of like, after 9/11 in the United States, united everyone. And it's been a real national effort to recover from this and to rally for a war in response to this. But at the same time, people have apparently lost all faith in the government. So it's a very kind of grassroots effort. And it's not being led by our politicians. In fact, it's widely anticipated that after this war, there will be a reckoning and kind of a house cleaning.
Is this translating over also to negotiating with Hamas all the time? I mean, is the idea, at least the feeling that we have here, is Israel's had enough of this little game of we want a two-state solution? No, you don't. you know, and you're barbarians, and you can't, we can't deal with you? Or is what's happening to the rest of the world like, you know, no, wait a minute, let's not be too rash here. Is that happening at all in Israel?
Yes, I think in Israel I think the idea of a two-state solution has been kind of was discredited in Israel long before
this.
The U.S. and American Jews caught up. So there isn't a lot of faith in a two-state solution. It's pretty clear that there's no partner for peace right now. Even those who would very much like to see peace, which is probably a majority of the country, still holds out hope. But no one expects it anytime soon. This has definitely... No one is talking about reconciliation right now. This has definitely kind of driven home the point that they're... that Israel has to fight for its existence, and there's no one to talk to about a two-state solution at the moment.
We are seeing some really frightening things here in America and all over the world, London, with these Palestinian support groups that are, exhilarated is a quote from one college professor. By the killing of innocents and the executions that happen by Gaza. And, you know, there are some politicians now here in America saying maybe we should deport some of these people. Can the rest of the world live with the Palestinians? How do you know who the good Palestinians are and who the bad Palestinians are?
That's a tough question. I by the way, have been a reporter in Israel for, I'm an American Jew. My father is Jewish and I grew up in the U.S. and I moved here about a decade ago to report. And I met an Israeli girl and fell in love and started a family. And now I've been stuck here ever since, happily stuck here, for the most part, but stuck here. So I'm Israeli now, and I live an Israeli life, but I'm American first and foremost in some ways, and I have been really appalled by the response from parts of the left and the media in the U.S. to this, and I think a lot of even liberal American Jews are kind of waking up that there's a bigger problem here, that you see so much of an overlap between a kind of radical Islamist ideology and what's supposed to be progressive worldview, and just the hatred of America and Israel and you know the West in general, the rejection of kind of basic liberal principles about equality under the law and all people being equal, and more of a worldview that's about oppression and power and vengeance and retribution. And it's been very, very disheartening, worse than I would have even expected in a lot of ways. There have been some, there's been some bright spots, of course. Biden has been less bad than feared, and there's been some sympathy for Israel in the media and everything. But, you see what the Rashida would believe, and Omar, Black Lives Matter, and the Harvard students, and you see the really atrocious reporting on this hospital blast that was pretty clearly carried out, or maybe it was an accident, but it was pretty clearly the result of a Palestinian rocket. And you had the New York Times and so much of the U.S. media taking as fact the word of Hamas terrorists. As far as what happened and how many people were killed and all that. And I think that's just that actual event yesterday was really kind of a good microcosm, or it was very revealing about a larger trend that isn't always quite so blatant and explicit with the media's tendency to just to the left sympathy to the Palestinian cause and the media's tendency to take the terrorists at their word.
We're talking to Andrew Tobin, I'm sorry we have a delay on the phone, Washington Free Beacon deputy editor. He's an American, lives there, has family there. He's, you know, been instructed, you know, come home by the U.S. State Department. He won't. Why? Why do you live there? Is a question that some people would ask. Andrew, I have 90 seconds. Answer for me the question, why would you just keep your family in danger by staying there? Why not leave Israel?
We considered the potential need to leave to protect our young son, who's 4 years old, and our my wife is 7.5 months or so pregnant. So there was we didn't dismiss the idea of leaving outright, but my wife's family's here. Her brother is a commando soldier who is returning from the U.S. actually, where he was living to fight this war. Her sister is serving in the military. Her base was overrun by these terrorists. We have a community here to support, and that's one thing. And the other thing is, we, like you said, we feel the need to be here, kind of in solidarity with the Jewish nation, which doesn't have anywhere else to go.
Yeah,
and this is a fight that we have to win, and I think in some ways it's a fight for against all these forces we've been talking about.
Yeah,
the interviews of freedom around the world.
Yeah, Andrew, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for talking to us. If there is anything that we or that I or my audience can do to help, you please feel free to jump on the phone with us immediately. Andrew Tobin from the Washington Free Beacon, deputy editor, will be praying for you and your family and the birth of your next child. Godspeed.
One of the best measures of how corrupt a country is how rich its leaders get while they're in office. They're not so good at passing laws or governing, but they're great at investing.
Imagine if every American could make money off of war.
In 103 days, that position ends up gaining around 103%. So she made $2 million plus her original two, so $4
million. I signed, co-sponsored a bill and made too much voluminous flair over it that I wouldn't be seated. So I shut up. The threats that fly around are just absolutely insane.
The Blaze Originals team traveled to Washington, D.C., home to one of the most brilliant financial minds in the world, Nancy Pelosi. In our documentary, Bought and Paid For, How Politicians Get Filthy Rich, we spoke to Reps Matt Gaetz and Chip Roy, George Santos, and the bane of D.C. elites, Unusual Whales, to expose how our elected officials are beating the stock market and, more importantly, what we can do. To watch today, go to congressgetsrich.com and use code RICH to get $30 off an annual subscription to Blaze TV.